Now, after his enforced departure for Athens, Nicias and Lamachus continued to disagree about what to do. The end result was that the Athenian fleet did nothing for the rest of 415 and very little for 414. However, in that year, 414, the idea was obviously formed to besiege Syracuse. And to this end, the Athenians began to build a wall to the west of Syracuse on a plain called Epipolae, the idea being to use this as a defensive wall for their army to besiege Syracuse, while at the same time the fleet would blockade it from Syracuse's harbor. That's perhaps why in 414 we have an embassy from Syracuse going to Sparta asking for help against the Athenians. And guess who also lent their voices to the Syracusan request? Corinth. Because Syracuse was a Corinthian colony, remember? So what had started off as a separate undertaking from the Peloponnesian War to help Egesta and potentially conquer Sicily, and so add it to the Athenian Empire, had now blown up in the Athenians' faces. The costliest expedition ever was now part of the Peloponnesian War anyway. And to make matters worse, the Syracusans didn't take too kindly to the Athenians building that wall to the west of Syracuse. And they launched an attack on the Athenians, and during this attack, Lamachus was killed. That meant that supreme command was now in the hands of Nicias, the man who'd been against the expedition in the first place, and he'd hardly performed brilliantly elsewhere anyway. Remember his lackluster effort at Sphacteria. I wonder whether any Athenian remembered the second of Pericles' strategies not to expand the empire until the war was over, and wished that the clock could be turned back. The recall of Alcibiades, in fact the recall of any general, at such a critical juncture in this Sicilian campaign, was not only disgraceful on the part of the Athenians, given that the assembly had found there was no evidence against him previously, but also it was stupid. It's another example of the mass of the people being swayed by the rhetoric of speakers, in this case Alcibiades' enemies. Pericles was obviously just a name by now, and his strategy had long been disregarded. Needless to say, Alcibiades saw the writing on the wall. In other words, he knew that he was going to fall victim to trumped-up charges in a trial, especially as most of his support base was now in the western Mediterranean with the fleet. So Alcibiades took the only course open to him. He escaped from his escort back to Athens and fled to Sparta, no less, where he began to intrigue with the Spartans against the Athenians. They'd treated him so contemptuously anyway, so can we really blame him for that? But back to Sicily. We've got Lamachus now dead, we've got Nicias in sole command. For once, Nicias took the bull by the horns and he ordered the fleet into the harbour at Syracuse. Now this bold move took the Syracusans a bit by surprise, and it would have lessened the odds on the Athenians quite a bit as well. But then the tables turned dramatically for Syracuse, and the odds on the Athenians went sky high again. The Syracusan embassy to Sparta had met with success after all. It was aided in its quest by Corinth's diplomacy, and also by Alcibiades, who was still in Sparta. And the Spartans now make an alliance with Syracuse, and they sent a general by the name of Gylippus and a force to Syracuse. And within days of arriving at Syracuse, Gylippus and the Spartans had formed a joint plan with the Syracusans that undid all of Nicias' good work. They attacked the Athenian forces at Epipolae, and they built a counter wall to what the Athenians were still trying to construct. That meant the blockade of Syracuse from the west was now impossible. Gylippus, by the way, is an interesting character. He's a product of the declining number of Spartiates. Let me explain. As we know, In Sparta, only those that had graduated in the agoge and could maintain their syssity on Jews were homoioi, or equals, Spartiates. Anyone else was an inferior. But manpower problems meant that the Spartans had to rethink some things. And one was whether they needed to make adjustments to their society. And we find the rise of a group of Spartans at this time called Mothakes. These are either Spartans who could no longer maintain their syssity on Jews, or, this is interesting, they were the children of Spartan fathers and Helot mothers. And Gylippus was a Mothax. And here he is, not a lowly soldier pressed into service, but the general in charge of the Spartan army in Syracuse.